You're listening to a podcast from 702.
Because this journey is better taken together.
Let's walk the talk. 702.
And of course, the listener's choice segment of the program, especially one of my favorite segments when I fill in for Clement, because the content aired on this particular slot is content curated by you, the listener. We're always trying our best to bring in experts to help us understand suggested topics better, and today is no different. So last week we got a call from Mpo, who asked us to bring in a urologist onto the program to talk about diabetes and its link to erectile dysfunction. To talk about that, Dr. Shingai Mutambirwa, the head of urology at George Mukhari Hospital. Dr. Mutambirwa, thank you very much for your time on 702.
Thanks for the invitation, Nicholas.
So I'm going to throw it out there before we chat to the good doctor now. Do you have a similar story to Mpo? What are your questions for the doctor? Give us a call, 011-883-0702, or send them through on WhatsApp or SMS. So, doctor, break it down for us. I mean, how common is erectile dysfunction among patients that suffer from diabetes?
Erectile dysfunction is actually extremely common amongst men. The data is pretty clear that guys have the best erections between the ages of 18 and 22. And then as the years go by, there's always going to be some wear and tear, and eventually quite a large proportion of men are going to have erectile dysfunction. And again, statistically, by the time a guy reaches the age of 40, about half of men are going to have a problem with erections for various reasons, which I'll touch on in a bit. But the thing is that if you have diabetes, high blood pressure, or increased cholesterol, or other conditions, chronic conditions such as cancers and things, there is a massive increase in the amount of patients who are going to have erectile dysfunction. In fact, when you look at it statistically, anywhere between 60 and 80% of guys who have diabetes will have some form of erectile dysfunction.
So, doctor, what is erectile dysfunction? I mean, is it just the flat-out inability to get an erection? Is it the inability to get an erection after sexual intercourse, after going one or two, three rounds? I mean, what is it? And is it different things to different people?
Yeah, that's an excellent question, Nicholas. Essentially, for the listeners, there are three types of erections that guys get. One of them is what we call the psychogenic erection, the one where whichever knows that way you feel like having sex, it then sends a signal to give you an erection. The second is what we call a reflexogenic, which is a reflex, sort of like a knee jerk, which, for example, if the patient has paraplegia, he can't get a signal from the brain to the penis, but if you pinch the tip of the penis or the inside of the anus, it can cause a reflex erection. That's why the majority of paraplegic men can still have sex. And then the third one is what we call a nocturnal erection, what happens at night. And that one is related a lot to the man chemical testosterone. What it's really trying to do is just increase oxygen to the penis. And that's why even young boys and newborns have actually more erections than the older men, with some of them using 9 to 12 erections, but they're not the psychogenic sexually stimulating ones that you'd be getting for intercourse. And that's why the morning erections usually can't be used for sex. They usually go down unless you're feeling sexually stimulated. Now, I think the important thing for everyone to understand, we're going to explain how the diabetes and all these other things are going to cause is what an erection is. Essentially, the penis is mainly made up of two sponge-like tissues, one on each side called the corpora. And when a guy gets an erection from any of those three courses, what happens is that this nerve signal, which tells this blood tube, the main big blood tube, to increase the amount of blood flowing into the penis, which then causes engorgement of the penis. So in other words, an erection is not a bone or a muscle. It's just a lot of blood in your penis, essentially. And when you consider that the causes of erectile dysfunction are exactly the same as the ones for heart attacks, strokes, loss of limbs, and also cancers as well are also related, you'll understand that I think the simplest way I usually like to tell patients is that the main blood vessel to the penis is slightly smaller than the main blood vessel to the heart, which is slightly smaller than the main blood vessel to the brain, which is slightly smaller than the main blood vessel that goes down to the leg. And essentially, when you have any form of cardiovascular condition, heart attacks and things, what's happening is that the inside coating of these blood sheets, which are, it's like a skin covering inside there, which we call the endothelium, is getting damaged. And as it gets damaged, it gets a scar inside there, which eventually cuts off blood flowing into the heart or the brain or whatever. And so if you're having damage to the inside coating of the main blood vessel to the heart, the effect on a slightly smaller vessel like to the penis is going to be even more profound. And so we know that if you have a regular decrease in erections, erectile dysfunction for more than 3 months, because remember, every guy, we do have failure sometimes, but if it's a regular thing for 3 months, you are now predisposed to developing heart attacks, strokes, loss of limbs. Inflammation is also important for damaging this. And so when you look at diabetes, hypertension, sugar, inflammation from cancers or chronic infections, this is not about the sugar causing you to have a damage to your blood vessels. What's happening is it's damaging that inside coating. So the sugar is damaging the inside coating of your blood vessels. So the high blood from shear forces is damaging the inside coating of your blood vessels. The fat in their bloodstream is accumulating this endothelium, this inside skin covering, and inflammation is causing your cells to damage the inside of this coating. So all of them are interrelated. And so if you have any of these conditions, and a lot of people think that they can diagnose it by symptoms usually, let me tell you that the majority of patients with diabetes have very few symptoms until it's quite advanced. You need to go and see your healthcare practitioner. Hypertension does not make you feel hot. You're not going to feel hot, and that's what's going to make you feel like you've got hypertension. You need to go and get your blood pressure checked. Your cholesterol is not going to be causing you lumps of fat on the skin. It needs to be checked by your healthcare professional. And similarly, I always like to use prostate cancer. Your chances of picking up a prostate cancer by symptoms literally means that you're going to be uncurable by that stage. So you need to go to your healthcare practitioner. So I think it's important for everyone to just take some control over their health conditions and just make sure that you get seen. And if you do get treated and seen for these conditions, you have a much decreased risk of getting erectile dysfunction.
Being proactive is the name of the game, is the message I'm getting from you. If you've just joined us, Dr. Shingai Mutambira, the head of urology at George Mukhari Hospital, chatting to us about erectile dysfunction and diabetes. Before we move on with our conversation on diabetes itself, what's the very first alarm bell that you should have when it comes to erectile dysfunction? Is it the inability to get an erection when sexually active in the moment itself? Should we be worried if we're not waking up with the what some people call the salute, the early morning erection? What's the very first ring, alarm bell that should fire off in your ears?
That's excellent again. The point is that even young guys can have problems with their erections as well. And remember, the actually commonest sexual problem for guys is actually premature ejaculation. About 80-90% of guys get it at some stage in our lives. And that can also make people think they've got erectile dysfunction, although what's happening is that they're just not being able to penetrate and last long enough, even though they are getting good erections. Now, I think the short answer really is that if you have any form of sexual problem or any other issue, just get yourself checked out. But I don't want guys rushing around just because it happened once off or it happens once a week or whatever, that there's a problem. If you have erectile dysfunction, which is profound, an inability to have an erection sufficient for penetrative or whatever other form of sexual activity that you're involved in for 3 months at least, because as I said, even with premature ejaculation, we sometimes, just like erections, we sometimes will fail as well. But if it's consistent for 3 months, that you're not getting the erections when you're sexually stimulated, that's a problem. Similarly, for the morning erections, what's important to remember is that even if you are still getting good erections for intercourse, if you're not getting the morning erections, because it's not related, we think it's not directly related to the stimulus from the brain, and it's more related to the man chemical testosterone from the testicles, you should also be getting yourself checked if it's been going on for more than 3 months, and we usually have to do a blood test to check the testosterone level. And the testosterone is super important for erections. And when it comes to diabetes, we know that the vast majority of men who have diabetes, unfortunately, will get what we call testosterone deficiency syndrome, where there's a decrease in the man chemical. And that's really important, not only for the erections, because it helps for various things that improve the erections, but also the feeling of having sex. It's also important in temperature control. So some guys who get hot flashes and things like that. It's also important for muscle strength. It's also important to decrease the amount of fat, especially what we call the visceral fat, which is sitting around your belly. And that's the one that's also going to be causing you more sugar diabetes, high blood pressure. So it's sort of like a vicious cycle that's going on. So I'll just put the number, the time, 3 months, if you're not having a problem with any of these erections, or with, if you're having problems with ejaculation and it's consistent and it's bothering you more, they're also quite important for that. So you should get yourself checked out.
We'll delve more into diabetes and erectile dysfunction in a moment or so. But Paul in Michalis Park has a question on extracorporeal shockwave therapy. Paul?
Yes, good morning, Doc. I'd like to find out the effectiveness of extracorporeal shockwave therapy for erectile dysfunction.
Yeah, that's obviously you've been reading up a lot of the topic. Essentially, what ESWL or extracorporeal shockwave therapy is, it's a therapy which was initially developed actually for us to use as urologists.
Nice, Paul. Please do put the radio down in the background there. Sorry, Doctor, you still with us?
Yeah, I've got it there. Yeah, okay. And what it's doing is it's a specific machine which is sending shockwaves through a fluid, usually water or gel. And it sends the shockwave through the skin into tissue inside the body. And if it's strong, you can use it to break up some types of stones without actually cutting the patient open or using other procedures. Now, it was adapted also to the penis for erectile dysfunction. And what we think it's doing is that it uses a much lower energy than we use for kidney stones. But what we do is there's machines which we can put on the main blood vessels around that are supplying the spongy tissues, these corpora. And we don't know exactly what the physiology is. We think that it's possibly breaking up some of these scars, these atheromas that I was talking about inside the endothelium. But it also has some effect on improving some growth factors in the area and also increasing stem cell function in the area of the penis. So there's been a lot of trials on it, and the data is pretty good. It's not as strong as for the main medications, the PDE5s, the Viagra, the Levitra, Cialis of the world, but it has got some pretty good data as well. And you have to go for sessions. It depends on the paper. It's about a 20-minute session every week or twice a week, and it does seem to have some enduring responses. Just a caveat to that, though, is that there is also a lot of people who are using platelet-derived injections and also stem cell injections into the penis to try to improve the erections. There is data that's coming out, but it's really not very robust. So if you are having erectile dysfunction, I would say that the shockwave therapy to the penis is probably reasonable. Can be a bit expensive depending on what you're doing. The normal drugs, the PDE5s, and possibly the injections are probably the first line. But all of these other stem cells and platelet-derived growth factors and things, you should probably only be doing it on trial because we don't really have that great data yet.
Thanks for the phone call there, Paul in Michalisburg. Once you have established that your erectile dysfunction has been caused by your underlying condition of diabetes, Dr. Mutambira, where do we go to from there? What's the first line of defense, or at least a treatment that you would recommend?
That's excellent, yeah. I think I always like to say we're in Africa, so I think the most important thing is to follow with the big five. And the big five are the same things that we use to protect you from heart attacks, strokes, cancers. All of them are related, including erectile dysfunction. And what those are is, number one, diet. Diet, and especially the numbers of calories, and especially the high caloric focus, sugary bits and pieces, although any amount, you should just be decreasing the numbers of calories in your diet if possible. You should also begin, at number two, a bit of exercise. And it doesn't have to be too much exercise. Most of the data actually shows that you only need to do about 3.5 minutes of intense exercise to get the same benefits as an hour and a half of going to for moderate exercise. So a little bit of exercise, that's also important. Number three is to make sure that you're not stressed. Stress, we know, can cause problems. It increases the risk of diabetes, hypertension, all of these things, because we know that stress chemicals actually are what we call cytokines, which actually go running through your bloodstream, causing you to get high blood pressure, sugar diabetes, high cholesterol. have to decrease stress, and stress is so big, especially in this COVID era, so you please get yourself in. Number four, it's, I don't want to pontificate, but it's the probably the most important social choice a person can make, and that's not to smoke. Smoking damages everything. It causes erectile dysfunction. It causes all types of cancers. It causes heart attacks. It causes, if you can stop or not start at all the better, that'll improve you.
And does that go for only smoking tobacco?
That's okay. I know we're going to talk about cannabis here. I'll come to that in the fifth one, because the fifth one is substances, other substances, be it alcohol, cannabis or whatever. The short answer for the is that tobacco smoking is significantly more dangerous than cannabis smoking as a general rule, for various reasons. The amount of smoke and the inhalants that you're taking in, but also some of the contaminants and other things that are found in the cigarettes. I'm not saying that smoking cannabis is a good thing for you, but we do use it very safely for patients with cancers, pain, and various other conditions as well. So cannabis, and if you're using cannabis oil, then that's also a reasonable thing. But smoking, unfortunately, is by far the most important social damage. Cannabis, as I said, we are using it medically now, so it's a slightly different thing, and we do have data that does help with that as well.
If you just joined us, we'd like to take your calls, your questions to Dr. Shingai Mutambira. He's chatting to us about erectile dysfunction and diabetes. Tsepo in Kempton Park, your question on erectile dysfunction.
Yes, Doc, I just want to know that, is this condition manageable, or you can manage to treat it?
Oh, yeah, the erectile dysfunction. Basically, all types of sexual dysfunction, from decreased libido, premature ejaculation, erectile dysfunction for guys, as well as for the females. The females are a little bit more complex and use more efficient organisms than men, so they're not just on-off organs with the penis. So, but there's also treatments for female sexual dysfunctions as well. And essentially for erectile dysfunction, Nicholas was asking about what we should do to start off with those five things: changing your lifestyle, making sure you get those things sorted out, make sure that you take your treatments for your high blood pressure, your sugar, for your cholesterol, because those are life-threatening. And even though sometimes the treatments can cause erectile dysfunction and some other sexual dysfunctions, that needs to be addressed. After that, or in at the same time, concurrently, in fact, as most of us in sexual health will do, we will treat the erectile dysfunction or premature ejaculation, whatever. And the erectile dysfunction treatments are actually extremely efficient and extremely good for your health in reality. The first-line treatment after you've done all these changes is what we call the PDE5s or phosphodiesterase 5 inhibitors. That would be sildenafil, vardenafil, and tadalafil in South Africa. And basically, all of them, what they're doing is they're basically stopping a breakdown product, the breakdown of a chemical that's making your blood vessels relax. And they're very efficient, super safe, essentially no side effects that were of significance. You get a bit of headache in some people, get a bit of flushing. But what's really important is that now we've got data, we've actually even published from our units as well, that it does protect you from heart attacks. It helps to decrease your chances of heart attack, strokes, loss of limb. In fact, somebody at one conference was calling it the aspirin of the rich. But they're super safe, I mean, they're first-line treatments, and they work in the vast majority of guys. But some people fail on the treatment. We then look a little bit into the man chemical testosterone, because if you've got a low testosterone, that's the commonest reason why you'd not respond to these PDE5s. And then after that, they go into second-line treatments, which are like the injections that are injected into the spongy tissue, which are very effective, but they do have the danger of running into something called priapism, which is where the erection lasts too long and it can actually damage the penis. But it is an option as well. There are vacuum pumps which are very cost-effective, and it's a once-off buy, and you basically use a vacuum pump to suck blood into the penis and then put an elastic band at the base, and then that you can use it for intercourse. And then there are lots of other things like these shockwave things and other newer things that in the horizon. You've got stuff like something called hedgehog signaling and stuff, and nitric oxide that's going to be stimulators and things that are coming up in the future. But you do have treatments for it, but you must just, most of them are need a prescription, and you need to be seen by your healthcare professional, and you must make sure you've done the behavioral things and you've made sure you haven't got sugar, diabetes, and all those other things. Treatment for them.
Dr. Mutambira, we've got a couple of quickfire questions here on the WhatsApp line. I'm going to ask you, beg of you to try and keep it brief because we're working against time gods of radio now. Anonymous says, I was circumcised 3 years ago. I can have a normal erection, but since then I don't experience the morning erection. That salute I spoke about earlier. He wants to know, is it normal?
It's probably unrelated to the circumcision. I'd rather look into getting a testosterone level checked because there's no direct link between decreasing. There is a slight decrease in sensation for some guys, but there's an increase in sensation for some other guys when you're having sex. But it doesn't directly affect how the erections happen. So I'd go and see a physician about the testosterone level.
So someone else asks, erectile dysfunction. My boyfriend struggles to ejaculate. He keeps an erection, but he cannot ejaculate. What could be the cause?
Yeah, that's a more complex problem than most of these other ones we'll be discussing. That one often we don't actually know. There are some underlying medical reasons, but we suspect that the majority of the issue is going to be about in the psychological aspect. And psychological is super important. So please, if you are worried about it and you're trying to have a child or whatever, I would advise you to go and see a romance therapist. I'm not a romance therapist, but if you get onto our Men's Health website, there are a lot of great romance therapists who can walk you through it, but you should still get checked for the basic conditions, sugar, blood pressure, and everything as well.
Some may argue that's not necessarily a problem, but good doctor, rounding up our conversation about erectile dysfunction, Anonymous wants to know, I sometimes experience severe pain and discomfort in my scrotum when I have an erection for a long time. What could be the cause?
I think that one's going to take a bit too long, but essentially you should get it checked out. There's something called a prostate, which is in the area where you get an erection. It can be because of tethering of and scars. Theoretically, it could be because of growths and stuff, almost certainly not a cancer or anything. But I think you should go and see your GP to start off with, give him the thing, and then he can refer you to somebody who can might be able to make a more solid diagnosis.
Fantastic, doctor. Now tell us, how can we get a hold of you? Maybe someone wants to come and take up their erectile problems, erectile dysfunction, and get you to diagnose them directly. Do you just practice at George Macquarie Hospital, or are you in private practice as well?
I do have a limited private practice in Soweto at one of the two private hospitals, September Private Hospital, but I'm not there regularly, so they'd have to phone in, and then they could ask for an office if it's really necessary. But there are lots of good guys out there, and even if they wanted to get in touch, they can also email me at my university email address. If they're keen enough, they'll be able to find it, and I can direct them somebody in their area.
Please do share your email address with us quickly.
The university one is shingai.mutambua@smu.ac.za.
Fantastic. And humble to boot. What a fantastic conversation with you, Dr. Shingai Mutambura. Thank you very much for taking time to painstakingly unpack the intricacies behind erectile dysfunction. Interesting conversation, to say the least.